On the Wintrust Business Lunch, produced by Pete Zimmerman. Hi, it's John Williams. Paul Nolte's here, portfolio manager at Kingsview Investment Management. The website is kingsview.com. Hi, Paul. Welcome.
Good afternoon, John. Nice to be with you again.
Yeah, we always appreciate your analysis of markets and the economy. What do you make of the last couple of days on the indices?
I'm still flipping quarters trying to figure out which way the market's going to go on a daily basis. We've had now 1% moves in the NASDAQ, I want to say 12 of the last 16 trading days. So it's been a very volatile market. It is one that is not very far off of all-time highs, but it's starting to show signs of a little bit of wear and tear and maybe get a little tired here. And probably due for at least a rest, along with the rest of us, over the Christmas holiday.
I wonder what that lack of direction means, though. Where's that coming from? Was it not sure what the Fed was going to do or what was going to happen to the variant? What is that all about?
Well, it's a little bit of all of it. Certainly the unknown factors. I mean, everybody will tell you the market hates uncertainty, and we have uncertainty with the current virus variant. We had some uncertainty with what the Fed was going to do, but that's now a certainty. And I think investors are looking at that and go, well, all right, so a couple of weeks ago we thought the Fed was going to eliminate all the bond purchases that they were doing by mid-year next year and probably have two increases in interest rates. Well, they're going to eliminate it all next year, but they're penciling in three increases in interest rates next year, and the markets actually rallied on the news, and I think a lot of it was, we now know what the Fed's going to do. But the other part of it is, we're going to see some higher interest rates, and that move in interest rates is usually not a good thing for the stock market over the next maybe 6 to 18 months or so.
You think it's a certainty that those that inflation is going to be with us for a while?
I think so. I mean, certainly, you know, wandering around town, going to different restaurants and flying, and you know that things are pretty busy. Certainly it doesn't look like it wandering through the loop today, but businesses are selling a lot of stuff. We're seeing retail sales year over year. Most of this year has been running at 10% above the same time a year ago. We never saw that before coming out of any prior recession. So there is a certain amount of demand that's well in excess of what we historically see. And I don't think it's necessarily a supply problem. It's a demand problem. People are buying a lot more stuff than they normally would be in this type of situation coming out of a recession.
Does some of that make you think that it's transitory, or do you have you dismissed that word now?
Oh, that we got rid of that word much earlier than the Fed chairman did. It's going to be with us for a while, and the part that concerns us the most is similar to what we saw in the 1980s is wage pressure. I need a raise because food and everything else is costing me a lot more. And the company comes through and says, okay, I'm going to give you a 5% raise, turns around and raises their prices to pay for your 5% raise, which then you go back to them again the following year and say, hey, by the way, I need another raise because prices for goods and services are up. And that spiral is something that we've not really seen in decades and really since the 80s. I'm fearful that that may be something that we might be seeing more of, but that's going to, I think, become more known over the next year or two.
Well, then, is it safe to say that the triggers were transitory? I mean, because you can have rising wages without inflation, at least not the kind that we're seeing right now.
No, that's true. And where that happened before, you know, when you look at wage growth, you always compare it to inflation and how are people doing versus inflation. And for quite some time, wages were actually going much better than inflation. So the average worker was actually getting dollars ahead. There was a fair amount of demand for workers in the workforce and a lot of people willing to go into the workforce. Right now, we're kind of seeing some of the opposite. We're seeing a lot of people that have left the workforce, many that may not return to the workforce. So it's a different type of economy than what we've experienced before. And I think everybody's still trying to figure out how that's all playing out because we've never been in this type of situation before. There are some things that are similar, but there are also some key differences between now and, say, the 1980s.
Those will be our topics next year. Paul Nolte, Portfolio Manager, Kingsview Investment Management. Well done, Paul. Thanks for your time.
Enjoy. enjoy the holidays. Thank you.
Ted Rossman joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. He's a senior industry analyst at creditcards.com. Welcome back, Ted. Nice to hear you.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Talk to me about retail sales. How are we doing right now?
We got the November retail sales figures from the Census Bureau this week. Some people thought they were disappointing. The gain was pretty minimal. It was only 0.3 percentage point month over month. The reason I'm not overly concerned about this is because the year-over-year comparison is a lot more positive. It was up 18%. From November of 2020. And I would note that a lot of people started their holiday shopping early this year. We found that half started prior to November 1st. So I really think that the supposed weakness from October to November, I think that was really just a pull forward in demand. And I think the overall holiday season will be up double digits from last year.
And do you think that's a fair or an appropriate comparison? I mean, you could shop online last year, so maybe it is, if not apples to oranges, apples to crab apples. Not the same, but pretty close, huh?
You bring up a good point that last year was actually stronger than a lot of people may realize, because we're really talking about goods here. It's services that have struggled, but in terms of holiday retail sales, they were actually up 8.5% from 2019 to 2020. And then the National Retail Federation thinks this year will be up another 11% or so. I really think it could be better because October was up 16% year over year. November was up 18% year over year. The point is that sales of goods have held up remarkably well throughout the pandemic. And I don't really see anything slowing that down. Consumers still have excess savings. As you said, it's really easy to shop online. You know, yes, we are worried about this increased wave of COVID cases, but I really think a lot of the holiday shopping is done at this point. And because online is such a force, I really think that any continued COVID surge, that's going to be felt more in services than in physical goods.
Where people come more in personal contact with each other. What's driving it? Is it traditional Christmas shopping, electronics, clothes, that sort of thing?
So what's interesting there is that a lot of the traditional holiday categories were actually the biggest drop-offs from October to November. We saw department stores were down 5.4% month over month. We saw electronics and appliances down 4.6% month over month. To be fair, both were up a lot year over year, 25 and 17% respectively. So it's not all bad news. But we did note in November that the biggest month over month increases were gas stations and food and beverage stores. Now that is really more of an inflation story because we know gas prices are up 60% year over year. We've seen grocery inflation of about 6%. So this, I think, is actually the kind of downside of this report, is that we are maybe starting to see inflation and supply chain disruptions play a bit of a role. I still think consumers and the economy are in good shape, but I would note that that was a bit of weakness in this report.
Oh, I think that's real shade. I mean, if we're spending more but we're getting less, then that's not a rosy shopping picture at all.
And the worry is that there may be this spillover effect, that people are starting to notice that they're spending a lot more at the gas pump. They're starting to spend a lot more at the grocery store. Rent prices are way up. So that's the worry, is that if those necessities cost more and then there's less that you can spend on discretionary stuff, that would potentially be bad news for the economy. I would, though, balance that by saying that consumer spending has continued to be robust overall. There are many estimates out there that Americans may still be sitting on something like $2 trillion worth of excess savings accumulated through stimulus and through spending less during much of the pandemic. It's all relative, though, right? And it gets back to that K-shaped recovery idea, the rich get richer, the poor get poorer. This has not been shared equally, but overall, I think the trends are more positive. Credit card debt is down 13% from the beginning of the pandemic. So I'm not too worried about it, but we also don't want to see inflation continue at this robust pace.
Ted Rossman is a senior industry analyst at creditcards.com. By the way, you also posted, at least one of your colleagues did at bankrate.com, an article about lending money to people and what the ramifications are of that. Just give me some headlines on that. What are the takeaways?
Yeah, that was interesting. So basically, 7 in 10 Americans have given financial help to a friend or family member. Maybe it was lending cash, maybe it was co-signing. 44% of people who have provided this financial assistance had something bad happen. And that's really our main point, is obviously we want to be empathetic and supportive, but we also want to educate people that a lot of the time it goes wrong. People lose money, the relationship gets hurt, your credit score gets hurt. So I would really think long and hard before doing this. Maybe there's a way to help in another way, offering job connections or loan connections, you know, maybe providing some advice. Maybe you can have your adult child move in with you for a while. I'm really wary of co-signing for somebody or lending money, unless it's money that you can't afford or that you can afford to lose, I should say. You know, if you're lending money and you're okay with not getting it back and you're okay with not hurting the relationship, then I guess it's okay. But put your proverbial oxygen mask on before helping somebody else.
Well, is there, yeah, I get it. But is there a number? Do you know what percentage of lent money expected to be paid back doesn't get paid back?
So we found that 38% of people who've provided financial assistance ended up losing money. What was interesting was we followed up with this hypothetical scenario and we said, let's say somebody owes you $100. Are you going to ask for it back? And it was half and half. Now, I should say that $100, not that it's nothing, but it's not terribly significant. Sometimes we're talking really big amounts, and that's what I really worry about. I actually think co-signing is the biggest danger here, because if you're co-signing for somebody's mortgage or student loans or car loan, I mean, these are big items that can go on for many years. Co-signing puts you at legal risk. You're basically fully liable for that debt. It can hurt your credit. Mm-hmm. It can cost you money. Co-signing is a lot worse than just spotting somebody $100.
It's really interesting writing at creditcards.com. Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst. Nice to talk to you, Ted. Thanks for your help today.
Same here. Happy holidays.
Here's Ed Wehmer, the founder and CEO at wintrust.com. Hey, Ed, welcome back to the show. How are you today?
I'm great, John. How are you?
Really good. Listen, let's talk just briefly about the bank and the banking business, and then let's talk about a donation that I know you want to make to a worthwhile cause in Chicago. How's business these days?
Business is terrific. We have our 30-year anniversary coming up since we opened the first bank and here in Lake Forest, and we hit $50 billion in assets. Not bad from a card table and me sitting there. So we're really excited. Things are going well. And Chicago is such a great place to do business. And we're like the last guy standing now. I mean, with all the bigger local banks gone, we're it. So we're growing like a weed and things are good.
What's driving that, Ed?
I think a lot of it is our So in the Midwest, people like the local bank and the high-touch sort of thing, and there are none left, really. I mean, Midwest, the person who rests is going to a bank in Indiana. Fifth Third took over MB. Really nobody left but us, and people like what we have to offer, and we still have that nice – we're high-touch, high-tech, John, and that's what does it. I mean, we say Santa Better Delivery System, Santa Better Products, and – film with service, and that's what we do. So people recognize that, and we walk the walk. We just don't just talk the talk. So,
yeah, well, I think here's an example of that. Walk the walk, not just talk the talk. You evidently know about our friend Corey Brooks, who's on the roof of a trailer across from his church. On that site, he is trying to build a community center, which will be more than just a gym and some basketball hoops, although it'll have recreation and social and music, but it'll also have industrial training, teach people trades. Somebody sent me a note the other day and they said, John, you make it sound like that's real easy. I think the opposite. I think that's high skill. I think it's high tech. And I think we need to train people as best we can. And if we had something like that on South Martin Luther King Drive, think of what that would do for that community and that population. It's an expensive proposition, though, Ed.
Yeah, it is. You know, we've seen it work before. We were involved in the opening of a Rupe College, part of Loyola University, and we've seen that the kids all, they wanted a place to go after school. because they couldn't go home. They get back stuck in the same rut they had been before with the bad influences and the like. So we built them a center where they could all go and hang out and study and be together. And we saw the results. After talking to the kids there, realized how important it is for them to have something like that. And as a result, we'd like to help the good pastor out.
So Corey's the pastor, and he's up on that roof for 100 days. He did this 10 years ago and raised enough money to buy the land and raise the building. But now putting a new one up is a heavy lift. So we've been directing our listeners to make donations there, as well as to the Salvation Army, by the way. And thank you for your $10,000 donation to our Salvation Army Red Kettle. What's your donation going to be for Corey Brooks?
I'm going to change it a little on you, John. We'd like to put up a matching grant of $125,000. And if we can get that amount between now and year end, I'll do it again. So that'd be $250,000. That'd be $500,000 we can raise for them. I think anybody that sits on a roof like that and is that dedicated, those are the guys you want to support and help. So I think it'd be awesome. I'm going to take time to challenge my other bank CEOs and other CEOs and our clients that we know to come on up and step up and let's do some good around here to somebody who really will put the money to good use and not waste it, and it'll be a wonderful thing. So that's our plan, and hopefully we'll get a good response, and good for the pastor for doing what he thinks is right, and it's a good thing, and we like to stand behind good things and help our city. We got a lot of money invested in this town, and we all know the way it's going, and gotta step up and do something.
Yeah, I think a lot of us can just sit there and say, well, gee, it's terrible. Somebody's got to do something. The mayor, the governor, the police chief, the parents, somebody's got to do something. What are we as individuals doing about that? If you're a CEO in Chicago and you believe in this city, then let's invest in this city too. And we're going to have to recut the commercial, because I heard you were going to give us $100,000, us, meaning Corey Brooks and his Project Hood. You're going to give him $100,250.
That's right. $100,250. If he gets it, matches it up, we'll do it again, and we'll do the same thing for the month of January.
I was completely unaware of that. I knew you were going to do what I thought was a $100,000 donation. I didn't know you were going to make it $125,000. I didn't know you'd double it if we can reach that goal. So let's do 125 times 2, 250. And then if we hit that, you'll do another 125 in the bucket. And we'll do that, make it 250 again. That's $500,000. That is enormous. That really says a lot, Ed.
Well, we got to help the guy. Sitting up on a roof like that, my God, he probably did blow away the other night. But
we were afraid he was going to be the rooftop pastor of Benton Harbor. Have you swung by
there? We got to do something, and this is a good thing.
Have you met Corey in person, Ed?
I have not.
All right.
I've been invited up on the roof, but I said I'd rather give money than sit up on the roof. I got Matt Gams, who works for us and runs our community outreach. We have supported Project Hood in the past few years. And I said, Matt, I'm not going up on the roof. You're an old Marine. You go up on the roof with me. He goes, I'd love to. So.
Well, actually, they've got tent. It's like a campsite. Think of it as a base camp at Mount Everest, if you will. And the summit is, I think, $30 million he's trying to get. Maybe it's 23. He's got 7 in pledges, but I'll believe every last dollar when we see it in the bank. But anyway, it's kind of nice up there. It's Spartan. It's these little tents and some space heaters. Yeah. And they've got a little wood fire up there and fire extinguishers. And he's been up there since around Thanksgiving. So he's going to be there January 1st. He was there Thanksgiving night. He'll be there Christmas morning. And he's working hard on social media and on TV networks and on local newscasts. He's doing everything, stamping his feet, saying, folks, you know, shaking our fist at the crime in the city doesn't make it go away. Let's do something. And he can't do it without dollars, Ed. And wow, are you helping out.
We're happy to do it. As we love supporting children and kids and education.
That's what it
That's
is.
That's our primary focus. And we don't give a handout. We give a hand up all the time. So this guy needs a hand up, and we're here for him and want to see him do really well. And I'm going to make some calls to get some more people involved, and hopefully we can double the 500 and get do really well. So I think there's no reason we can't in this town, and I'm going to strong-arm a bunch of guys, and we'll see where it goes.
All right, bless you and the staff over there. And by the way, so there's a match, if you will. Match music. Match music. So that was my impersonation of a telethon. So for 70, I'm going to visit with you on Monday. Let's get Corey on the phone on Monday, too, okay? And we'll tell him about our grand scheme here. But hopefully by Monday, we are on the way or maybe even there. And the way to make a donation, by the way, to match what Ed is talking about, Ed Wehmer, founder and CEO at Wintrust, wintrust.com is his website. Go to projecthood.org, projecthood, as in neighborhood, projecthood.org. And that's where Corey Brooks and company are. And you can you'll see where the link is in the comments. Write community center in the comments. Write community center. Okay, Ed. Merry Christmas. Thank you for what you're doing for Chicago. And we'll talk on Monday. All right.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks, John. Good luck, everybody. Get your checkbooks out. Let's go.
That's Ed Wehmer, the founder and CEO at Wintrust. And yeah, Corey Brooks and Project Hood instituted a CEO challenge. That's the first one I've heard step up like that. 1246 on WGN, more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A number of Chicago restaurants have temporarily closed due to breakthrough cases of COVID-19 among staff. But what's different this time is the establishments are closing for just a few days and not 2 weeks. The shutdowns last long enough to get everyone tested. In most of the cases, employees have to have 2 negative tests before they can return to work. Cranes reports the closures include Steingold's Jewish Deli on Southport Avenue, Bungalow by Middlebrow in Logan Square, Lost Lake Cocktail Bar, Old Irving Brewing, and Buddy Guy's Legends in the South Loop. Restaurants in Miami, New York, and across the nation are temporarily closing for positive cases as well. Chicago's Cars.com has named a new president. The company has promoted Doug Miller, who will take the number 2 job behind CEO Alex Vetter. Miller has been Cars.com's chief revenue officer since August of 2018. Prior to joining Cars, Miller was global vice president at travel site Expedia and chief revenue officer at Living Social. Cars.com is a popular vehicle listings marketplace and provides dealerships with websites and other software tools. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food, and Steve Alexander.
You know, John, I don't get too worked up about much of anything. But I have to admit, I panicked a tiny bit a few days ago when I heard there was a shortage of cream cheese, because without cream cheese, there would be no cheesecake under my tree.
Cream cheese is critical to us at Eli's.
That's Mark Schulman, the second-gen owner of Eli's Cheesecake, the son of Eli.
Ooh, you know, we might buy 5 million pounds of cream cheese a year.
Did you say 5 million?
Yeah, it's a lot.
And this isn't the kind of cream cheese you buy by the brick at the grocery store. Eli's has a specially formulated cream cheese.
Well, if you get an Eli's cheesecake, there's almost 2 pounds of cream cheese in every 3.5 pound cheesecake. So, you know, we just can't use any cream cheese. So it took us a long time to come up with the right formula that works for us.
Still thinking about that 5 million pounds a year. Anyway, back to the reason for my call to Mark. Is the cream cheese shortage causing a shortage of Eli's cheesecake?
Cream cheese and many other basic commodities, chocolate, sugar, other dairy, have really been tough to procure. So our team has been really busy working with several suppliers.
Okay, but is there enough Eli's cheesecake to go around during this, the busiest time of the year?
We've come close to running out, but we've not run out, so we've been able to meet all of our holiday orders.
Yay. Mark's dad started making cheesecake at the family restaurant, the Eli's, the place for steak. Eli passed away in 1988, but and the steakhouse is a memory now, but the cheesecake empire continues to thrive. Over 200 employees are involved in making the many varieties of Chicago-style cheesecake. From the farm to your belly, today is National Maple Syrup Day. Credit Native Americans with figuring out how to make tree sap taste good. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
One other note about that Eli's cheesecake stuff. On a phone line, Mark and Maureen Schulman from Eli's. Mark, Maureen, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, we're great.
I said on the radio the other day that the idea that you have a cinnamon bun cheesecake should be illegal. That's not even fair. That just sounds positively irresistible.
It's my favorite new cake that we've ever done. It's so good.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I thought. And so you guys have a cookbook then, too. People, are they able to cook Eli's quality cheesecakes at home?
Yes, they are able to cook Eli's quality cheesecake at home. And there's over 100 recipes. And it's divided up into sections, so there's batters, many flavors of batters, toppings, crust, so you can really be creative and mix and match. If you did all the combinations, you could make over 3,000 kinds of cheesecake.
I think I'm just going to have one 3,000 times, and I think I know which one it is.
It's going to be cinnamon roll.
Yes.
And also in the book, I know you were just talking about Eli's the place for steak. So whenever we're, you know, out and about, people are always asking us for recipes of what they miss the most from the restaurant. So we have 12 recipes from Eli's. Chicken Vesuvio, pepper steak, potato pancakes, all the favorites.
What's the number one? What's the one people ask about the most?
Of the restaurant, Liver Eli, hands down.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Although the chicken Vesuvio sounds pretty good too to me.
It's very good.
And the potato pancakes are great, chicken in the pot. So, you know, great memories. My dad's restaurant opened in 1966, closed in 2005, and really great history stories, but really good recipes. And we get pictures sent to us. People have made some pretty good versions of cheesecake and the dishes at home.
By the way, the recipe book also has a lot of Chicago celebrity tweaks on your cheesecake. Mike Ditka, Jeff Tweedy from Wilco, Joe Montaigne, etc., right?
Yes. That was a very fun part of the project. We asked them to dream up their favorite cheesecake, and then we made a few versions and sent them to them, or they came to taste, and then we settled on the version. So it's been very fun. And with this cookbook, Miguel Cervantes, who is Alexander Hamilton in Chicago and currently on Broadway, he and his family came up with a cake. And so we're going to have a percentage of the proceeds from the book go to cure epilepsy.
Hmm. Well, that's right on. What's the address? What's the best way for us to get the book? Just wherever I buy cookbooks?
You can do that. But if you wanted to have that donation go to cure, then you would go to our website, which is elicheesecake.com.
Eli Cheesecake. Yeah, no S in the middle there. EliCheesecake.com.
Right.
Eli's Cheesecake Cookbook, Remarkable Recipes from a Chicago Legend. Okay, well done, you two. Thanks for the business, and thanks for the, thanks for the cheesecakes for everybody in Chicago. I haven't personally sampled this yet, so I'll make the purchase here soon, but well done.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Happy holidays.
Mark and Maureen Schulman,